When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 15th episode of the NHL podcast presented by The Hockey News. My name is Safir, joined by my co-host over here, Rahil. And Rahil, there's a lot going on in the hockey world, man. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good. Things have been going good. It's a long weekend. We're recording the day after the NA finals, which we're going to get into. I would ask you how you feel, Safir, but I'm going to be honest with you. I think the last three episodes, it's been nothing but bad Leafs news. So I'm not even going to ask you how you're feeling because I already know it. And off that, Safir, let's dive into it. Like, bro, what are your thoughts about this whole Dubé situation? I just want to know how you're feeling. Are you okay?
Okay. I have to say, it's been a shocking week, like you said, right? Like nobody expected that Kyle Dubas would be like go essentially. For me, like, yeah, it's shocking news, but at the same time, I am optimistic. I'm hopeful that, you know, we'll get a candidate that's going to fit the role perfectly for them. Hopefully we go with some sort of experience, but I mean, it is tough. Obviously it's shocking because Kyle Dubas was an exceptional general manager for the Leafs, probably the best one that we've had in decades, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think I'll kind of give the perspective of anyone who's not a Leafs fan. First off, shocked because, like, literally you had earlier in the week, for those of you who didn't know, obviously Dubas was like, oh, yeah, like, I need to consider if I want to stay here, basically is what he said. Obviously talked about his family being a huge factor for that, which I'm sure we can all attest and understand. And then Shanahan was just kind of like, well, and I understand you said that. Now I need to reconsider. Now you're asking for more money. I don't know. The whole thing with me was just a mess. I know Steve Dangle's pissed about it. I watched his video last night. I was up late. I made some like leftovers. I was just watching it. I think a lot of Leafs Nation is shocked. I think a lot of Leafs Nation feels like this is a bit of a I wouldn't say a backstabbing move, but it's a little bit of one of those like, hey, like, you know, on the way out, like I'm going to get you when you're not looking, which is unfortunate. But I think for the rest of the NHL, I think we should all be happy unless Dubas goes to a rival team of yours, because Dubas was he had his bad moments. Obviously, you know, the Nylander negotiations and stuff like that with Marner, too. But I mean, like the team he assembled this year was a really, really good team. They probably should have went far. I think it's on the players that they didn't. I don't think it's on Dubas. And we could get into the coach and stuff. Like, you know, that's a bit too. But I don't think you can put that much blame on the GM. And I think a lot of the hockey world is kind of shocked about just he's gone. And on that note, Safir, like you said, you're optimistic. What do you think they're going to do going forward? Do you think they're going to look for someone younger? Do you think they're going to look for someone older? Do you think they're going to hire Mark Bergevin? I saw him on the betting odds. I mean, hey, Mark Bergevin, fantastic GM. 10 out of 10, I'd recommend.
Right, of course, yeah. Though I definitely see those tweets a lot and, you know, mostly from Habs fans for sure. But yeah, you know what? I will say, though, it's interesting. The Leafs went with Kyle Dubas, who at the time was very inexperienced, is essentially his first go at everything. And it probably took him a couple of years, but he, by the end of it, I think that he nailed the job and he's figured it out. And like you said, not everything was a good move for the Leafs, but overall he had made a lot of really good moves, obviously, particularly in this year's trade deadline. So moving forward, with where the Maple Leafs are at such a critical time in their franchise, I think they have to be very careful. And to me, careful also means an experienced general manager coming into the organization. So, you know, there's a lot of candidates out there. I hope they pull in the right ones, but what do you think?
I don't know. I think they definitely do need to go with that experienced kind of GM at this point. I mean, you know, obviously it's going to be a very interesting, I'd say next 5 weeks for the Leafs, because you kind of have this, and this is what I think kind of is more of the shock about the whole situation is the draft's in 5 weeks. Like,
yeah,
Marner's no move clicks in 5-6 or a little bit after that, like 6 weeks. But like, there is a lot of decisions and you either need to rush the process of hiring a general manager or you need to take your time and then rush everything else. And I don't know where they're going to go with that. Getting an experienced GM will obviously help with that. There's rumors that I think Brad Tree Living's kind of the unofficial front runner right now, which mixed bag there, because obviously Calgary isn't that good of a team, which is the team he assembled. But that being said, he's drafted pretty well. And I think, like, as a Habs fan, I'm a little concerned about that. However, his on-ice results are a little different. So I don't know. I think a little experience, but I have a little bit of mixed. I don't know. It's just so interesting.
Yeah. And my biggest concern too is with the Austin Matthews extension. I hope that we get that done, and I have a feeling that the Leafs will be able to get it done. But the sooner we get a GM too, it'll make that entire process easier as well. Mm-hmm. So
absolutely.
Well, Rahil, obviously there's the second round of the playoff, or no, third round now with the conference finals. Second round. I'm so like traumatized from that. But hey, the Panthers and the Carolina Hurricanes, man. Games 1 and 2, both going to overtime. What are your overall thoughts, impressions, especially with that, what was it, 4 overtime in game 1?
Yeah, I think it was 20-something seconds left in quadruple overtime, and Florida wins.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. And they won last night, and they're up 2-0 in the series. And honestly, how about them Panthers? Like, I said it episodes ago. They remind me of the Montreal Canadiens in 2020. Sergei Bobrovsky literally reminds me of Carey Price turning back the clock, making that cap hit look like a steal. He was, I think, I can't remember if it was game 1 or game 2. He had 4-point-something goals above, like, expected saves, or saved goals above his expected. That's absolutely incredible. Listen, I mean, I would have loved for the Panthers to go out early because Montreal would have had a higher pick. But that being said, they beat Boston. They beat Toronto. They're now beating the Hurricanes, who had that whole Kotkaniemi offer sheet thing. As a Habs fan, I you know what? Let's go Panthers all the way. Why not, man? I'm looking forward to it. But the really surprising thing is both games did go to overtime, obviously. I know one was longer than the other. But I think that's just a testament to how evenly matched these two teams are, actually. And on paper, you kind of look at, obviously, Carolina's missing two of their bigger players, and I believe it's Svechnikov and Pacioretty. But that being said, like, Florida is, they're proving themselves. They're a pretty decently stacked out team. Their defense is playing all right. Their scorers are scoring. Kachuk is an absolute demon. Most marketable player in the NHL, Sophia. I don't care what anyone says. If you want to market your NHL franchise, you need a player like Matthew Kachuk. Don't you think so?
Oh, absolutely. The emotion that he brings, the charisma, and just his entire vibe on and off the ice is just like top notch for me. And, you know, like, looking back to the overtime winner in game 2, the way he just like pointed right at the doors and left the ice, that was amazing. It was like the confidence is there, you know, the team vibes are at an all-time high. This Panthers team is doing absolutely amazing, and obviously Bobrovsky is still doing what he does, just keeping his team in it. And yeah, this is a really strong run, a kind of a run that everybody expected from them last season. They're getting it now, and I'm starting to think that Stanley Cup, man, it's close to being a reality, let's just say.
It really is. It really is, Safir. And we'll dip aside to the other side of that as well. The Knights and Stars. Game 2 is going to be going down tonight on the time we're currently recording. But that game 1 also went to overtime, which, you know what? I'm going to just, like, we'll talk about the Stars and Knights for a brief moment. But, like, can we talk about the fact that these four markets, everyone was kind of like, oh, there's no, like, big team. That, you know, like, there's not that, like, big market team. All of the games have gone to overtime so far. Yeah. I think that's a testament to how good these teams really are. And listen, Knights obviously won game 1 in overtime. I think that series is far from over. I think that series is going to 7, Sophia.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I really do. I think it goes to 7. And, you know, Vegas dominated Dallas early in game 1. You know, like, there was an outpour of shots on Ottinger, and he was playing really, really well. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, the Stars also scored the first goal of the game. So it felt like it was going to be one of those games that Ottinger would steal from Vegas. It didn't turn out to be the case. But yeah, I think both of these series, both the Eastern Conference Finals and the Western Conference Finals, there's just so much going on. It's so exciting. Obviously, I'm more so enjoying the Panthers and the Canes series, more so than I expected and more so than many people that expected. But hey, like you said, it's just so awesome and so much fun along the way, really.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how the rest of these playoffs go. And I'm personally giving my nomination for Matthew Kachuk because I'm absolutely rooting for him. I love the way my uncle literally, I was talking to him about it. He's like, yeah, that Matthew Kachuk guy is really good. I was like, dude, I from now on, I'm calling him Matthew Tkachuk. I don't even care. Like that, the That's way he perfect. Said it was just perfect. We're going to transition into something a little different, Saphir, because you had some interesting news over the week. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah. So, you know, earlier this week, I woke up from my sleep, obviously, as humans do.
That's the news. He woke up.
That's the news, everybody. Yeah, I checked my phone and I saw a message from Clappy on Twitter. And he invited me to join the Game Changers program at EA. And I was taken back by it. I was like, you know, it's a program that I've always valued and I've followed it for years, actually, especially with my good friend Kesso being a part of it in previous years. So when I saw it, I immediately said yes. And basically what the Game Changers program is, it's basically it's a council of players, passionate players coming together and, you know, giving feedback directly to the EA development team, directly with the producers as well, you know, perhaps having access to the early builds of like say NHL 24, giving feedback. So it's a great way to improve the game in different areas. You know, if you're a pro guy, a franchise guy, gameplay, you have people in each for each of those represented in the council. So for me, it's more of like the gameplay aspect of it, but obviously also contributing my thoughts and feedback in other modes. And it's really exciting because obviously I want the game to improve in various aspects as well. So I feel privileged that I am a part of this and I'm very thankful for it too. It has a lot of benefits too when it comes to our podcast, right? So, you know, if you ever want to know the latest stuff, you know, whenever I get the green light from them, know that our podcast will have all of the details. And the thing that I'm mostly excited about is that although I'm learning a lot about NHL 24 right now, I get to sit on it a little bit, really understand it, because there's a lot of exciting things coming up for the game. So I'm really excited to share that with you, obviously, and our viewers in the future.
So you're basically saying you and I are going to play NHL 24 at the studio like in like July.
Well, yeah, I don't know if that's allowed, but...
I'm just kidding. But honestly, like, you know, aside from just speaking on behalf of a co-host, but like you absolutely deserve it. So if you're like... I do think like with the Game Changers, a lot of people look at it as like, oh, like you're just getting paid by EA to say good things about the game. Like, first off, you're not. Game Changers don't get paid. Literally are just like a voluntary council. There might be like one or two benefits, but you don't get like extra packs or anything like that. But I think the really good thing about this is you're going to be able to provide your feedback. And I think they have a good group of Game Changers right now. It is a little bit, it feels like we're in a little revolutionary spot because like some people like Kesso dropped out. You're coming in there as well. But I think the whole thing about the Game Changer program is, you know, a lot of people just look at it as this negative connotation when it really is just like people who are passionate about making the game good. And like, honestly, I think we can all agree to that. Like, you know, if you're watching this podcast or listening to this podcast, you probably have played NHL at some point. You probably complained about it like we have. And, you know, like just because Saphir's a game changer, we're not going to like be like, yeah, NHL 24 is amazing. It's great. If it's bad, we're going to be honest and say it's bad. The Game Changers aren't like, you know, hiding behind EA or anything like that. You know, honest criticism is the most important criticism, I think. I'm really excited. I mean, like, we'll see, but let's see if we can get some EA people on here. That'd be pretty cool if we could have like a developer on the podcast.
You know, I do have to say, I did ask one actually even before I was in the Game Changers program, and they gave some positive sort of answer to me that could be a possibility sometime in the future. So now that I'm in the program, that would be amazing if we can get somebody on this summer, perhaps, especially when they, you know, release some news about the game and we can discuss it with them directly. That's awesome. And that also, I love your point about like constructive criticism. That's absolutely right. And, you know, that's also part of the reason we are in the program. It's to provide that constructive criticism. Mm-hmm. And like, I also know that not every feedback will be implemented, right? And understanding so that it is a small team, the resources are limited. But obviously we try to help guide them in terms of prioritizing certain things over others, but also recognizing that it is a process and some things might take a couple of years even.
Exactly. You got to be patient with it. I mean, listen, I think we talked about this when NHL first came out. I am on the conspiracy theory. NHL 04 was a good game. NHL 14 was a great game. NHL 94 was a great game. NHL 24, like I have a conspiracy theory. I don't care. 24 is going to be a good game. Call me stupid for being optimistic after 23. I don't care. I'm excited for it, Saphir. And who knows?
Maybe
we can actually play NHL 24 early. We'll see. We can't show it. We can play it.
I will say your optimism is justified. I'm pretty optimistic as well from what I've heard so far.
Love to hear that. Love to hear that. I think the next thing we want to talk about before we get into the NA finals, I know we need to get into that, but I'm going to ask our producer back behind the scenes, Connor. Shout out, Connor. You're awesome. Can you pull up this screenshot? And what we're going to talk about here, guys, is Junior Pens. If you do not know, he is a competitive NHL player. He basically posted his best to worst rankings of most of the NHLs in, I believe it was this century, like from like the 2000s onwards. Okay. I have so much I want to yell at him about. I'm going to let you go first because I'm probably going to go off on a 5-minute tangent on this.
I love that. I can't wait to hear your tangent. I'm not going to lie. Okay. I will say, unlike most of the community, I don't disagree with the list as much. Obviously, there are some things that stand out to me. Like, why is NHL 15 not the worst game? Like, NHL 14 to me was a brutal product. Sorry, it was terrible. It was bare bones. Did you say
14 was bad?
No, 15. Sorry, did I say 14? No,
NHL 15. You said 14 for all. Oh, no. I was about to leave the podcast.
Oh, no, no. Oh, I'm sorry. No, that's a slip up. I meant to say 50. 14 deserved. No, 14 is a top three game of all time. Oh, my. That's a bad mistake. It's probably because we're talking about NHL 24. But anyways, 15, that is the worst game I've ever played. It was bare bones. It was just like.
There were no game modes.
There's no game modes. You go into the mode, you get into a game, and that's it. Like
I can play now. Oh, great.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the only exciting, I think that was the year they had like new commentary and whatnot. Like that was nice. And seeing like the graphic upgrades, obviously, from 20 or from 14. That was nice. But like the game was so bare bones. 21 as the worst is problematic. I would put 21 to like really good, in my opinion. I know 21 was the most difficult game for players to adjust to because you could force the puck and you could not rely on your AI defenseman to pick it up. They would never pick it up. The game forced you to play manual defense. I feel like I became an overall better defensive player because of NHL 21. Like certain things like crouching to block a pass or like diving to block a pass are things that I learned during that year that I still carry forward with me. Yeah, so it's amazing. So 21 should be better. I agree with his rankings of 13, 14, and 20 as the best games. And then I'm looking 18 was pretty bad. Like 18 would be terrible in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And the rest, I don't really have an opinion. I think 17 was pretty good. Okay. But yeah, that's kind of where I stand with it. What about you, Rahil?
Yeah, I've been patiently waiting here.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm so ready. Lay it on.
There's one thing I'm going to point out, and I'm going to ask you, and I'd like anyone else who listens to the podcast and the community, tweet me at @angrybound guy. Let me know what your thoughts on this. I don't know if it's just me. NHL 06, I remember because it was iconic. NHL 07, I remember because it was iconic. Even NHL 11 to a point. NHL 14, 13. I feel like after NHL 14, every game feels the same. Like you can differentiate a little bit, and maybe that's because I'm a little bit more of a casual player. I cannot remember, like I didn't play 15 because it was terrible. 16 onwards, like I can remember what's different, and I can be like, yeah, this was implemented, this was implemented, but it all felt very similar. And I think, I don't know if I'm the only one who thinks this, but I think if there's a lot of people who agree with me, that's a testament to how like stale it's been. Cause I know like we've had rivals for 4 or 5 years, the same rivals 4 or 5 years in a row.
Right.
A lot of it's gotten stale. So I think I'm going to just preface that at first, because that's kind of like where my rankings get a little mucky. Do you kind of agree though, Samir?
Yeah, I agree. Particularly cause like, I mean, recency bias effect here. I'm thinking about NHL 22 and 23 and how similar they honestly feel.
Like, and then even going back to 21, like it was different, but it was still kind of similar.
Absolutely. 20
was different, but kill is still kind of similar. It's not really till you get like 18, 17 that there was it was recognizably different.
Or like even like, yeah, I agree. Like the similarities from 22 to 23. And then I'm thinking about things like the goal line snipes, which went away in 22. That wasn't 21, but it's back in 23. So it's like, when you put it, it's like things go away, they come back, and it seems like repetitive at times too. Yeah. I see it.
So here's where I'm going to go. And part of this is going to be nostalgia based and all that stuff. NHL 13, 14, I agree, should be at the top. I think NHL 6 and 7 should be at really good. I think those, again, that is my age also being a factor, but I think that those NHLs were like what like I grew up on. That's what helped me fall in love with hockey. I remember playing NHL 06. with the Montreal Canadiens. I could never do any of the fancy Deke moves because that was terrible. And all I would do is I would manually adjust the settings so that all my players were 99. And I would just speed down the ice, cut in front and forehand at top corner every time with Zachary Kuiper. I don't understand how NHL 23 and NHL 22 can be up there. I understand. I think Junior Penz's rankings for these also factored in on how good he did competitively, which makes a little bit of sense. NHL 23 at best is terrible. I'm sorry. At best, it is terrible. And I'm talking about the game as a whole. Sixes is literally like I start my new LG season tonight. They're banning Big Tipper, Truculence, and Unstoppable Force. They're literally banning certain things in a competitive mode because they're too OP. And I understand a lot of esports do that, but like, dude, I like 23 should be down there. 22, and this is where it comes back to I don't even remember that much. I don't really remember that. I think any NHL pre-NHL 14, they were all pretty decent. I think 14 onwards is when Hutt really took off, like, and really started to grow.
It did, yes.
But I think 14 is, and like a lot of people say, oh, it's just bias, blah, blah, blah. I think 14 is one of the great, if not the greatest NHL of all time. That in 1994 or 94. 14, you had the app where you could literally like buy and sell cards. Like I was at school trying to like snipe cards and stuff while I was in class. Ischel was awesome because you could just customize every stat on your own. And there was no like, it was based off of how good you did in the XP. So it wasn't like, oh, I have to sacrifice here, but I only have a limit. It's like, I could just make my guy max speed, but then I can't make anything else because I have a certain amount of XP.
Right.
Hutt was awesome. Hutt was great. There was those, and I know it's something small, but they had moments where it was like, oh, like Jonathan Toews scored a hat trick in overtime to win, recreate his overtime goal with 5 minutes to go in overtime. Like, I know that's small stuff, and it didn't really, like, mean much. Like, you got, like, 500 coins. But that was a way to tie the real-life game into the video game, and I think that's when sports games do best. I always reference – I don't know if you play – I don't think you play MLB, Sophia, do you?
No, I played it like very casually, but not like
so that. MLB The Show 23, every week or every 2 weeks, they release like moments, and it's like the iconic moments of this week. So what the Blue Jays pitcher like threw like a scoreless game or something like that. So they like recreate his final inning, and it's like get three outs. But then you get to relive that moment, which is fun. But the thing that they do really well with it is they'll make it so that you relive the moment, and then you get points based off it, and the points are along a path, and at the end you get a really good player, and it's all no money spent. That is what sports games need, to be able to tie that real life into like the actual sport itself. I think 23 did a decent job at that, but I think the game is just completely broken. That like, dude, like you saw during the NA finals, like one or two of those goals, I was like, what is the goalie doing?
Yep. The goalie. Thanks.
So continue, Sophia. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I loved hearing that. I think you bring up a lot of valid points. For me, I liked NHL 13 because I think the skating system was like totally new and everything, and I really liked it. I know some people said that like the gameplay was a little bit too slow. It just felt like you didn't have like good agility and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So like fair, but like it brought like a sense of realism to me. I really like that. And then 14 was like a polished version. For me, I mainly played versus back then, so it's nice to hear from you like that. You know, they brought in like the moments live thing and 14, which is really great. It would be awesome to have that back in the future, actually. And then so it's nice to hear about HUD as well. I was not much of a HUD guy, but for me it was mainly versus. And I do have to say, I actually never played like 06, 07. I didn't play 10.
They were awesome.
Yeah. I did play 04. Mm. And this was before like I became like a true hockey fan. It was just like I got on the game and I really enjoyed it. I really loved the fighting system in NHL 04. It was fantastic. That's what I wanted to do all the time. Yeah. But other than that, I mean, it's an interesting one. Yeah. And I'm looking at Junior Penz's GWC. NHL 18, he plays second in the world. In 19 and 20, he plays top four in the United States. And those are the best
kids. I wonder why that's up there.
In 21, he plays top 32. And then 22, top 16, and then 23, top 8. I know he said that his rankings are not based on that, but I mean...
A little bit, maybe.
It's tough.
Yeah. Before we move on, Sevier, one final question. Where do you think NHL 24 is going to rank on this? Or sorry, where do you think it needs to rank on this to save NHL? Like, I don't think it needs to be best. I think it needs to be really good.
I agree. It needs to be really good. And I know that like they're a little bit in a transition period as well with like just like the games and everything. It should be really good. Like it has to be at this point, especially with how 23 went. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it needs to be really good.
I agree with that.
I agree.
All right. Well, thank you, Connor, for putting that up for us. I think we'll move on now to the main cream of the crop story. So here, the NHL 23 North American Championship is over. CAD, obviously, North American champion, defeating Jost in a best of three, 2-1. Overall impression, Sevier, how'd you feel about the whole thing?
I loved it. The entire event was so much fun just to watch everybody compete. The players they put on a show. It was amazing. The broadcasters, Carlin, No Sleeves, and Grizz, they killed it as usual. Every game, well, not every game, I guess, because obviously, like, there were some blowouts that we can talk about as well, but especially with how that started with Cat and Duncan. But it was just it was a great show. It was very unpredictable, and I really liked the unpredictability of it.
Yeah, I loved it, too. As Sophia was kind of hinting at there, obviously, Duncan lost his game one. I think it was, like, 13-2 or something like that. It was insane. And everyone was, like, Duncan, like, not. And honestly, I'm going to give him credit. The way he rebounded after that and was able to go in and play in the semifinals, absolute props to him. One thing I loved about this that I don't know if I saw it as much at the GWC last year, there was a good amount of chirping. Like
there was when, yes.
Like Duncan in one, I can't remember when at first Duncan was like really animated and stuff, but then like when the semifinals came, he was very dialed in and very still. Jost was like, dude, I felt like Jost was streaming on Twitch, like the way he was talking and chatting. I absolutely loved it. It was awesome. And just like, it was just like that. Like it was like, no chance, buddy. Not going in, buddy. I'm just like, man, I would be so rattled if I was on the other side. I don't know how anyone else did it. I think all four of those guys did absolutely amazing. All props to the four of them. Even if even for Sky and Duncan, you guys should still hold your head up high. That was very fun for a viewer perspective. And I think the really big thing for me was CAD going 5-1 on the day. Like, that is a dominant performance to be able to go in, obviously go 3-0 in the round robin, but then to literally that semifinal took forever between Jost and Duncan. And for him to just sit there and wait and then hop in and still be able to win in three, man, good on you, CAD. Props to you.
Yeah, and Grizz nailed the analysis too. He said that, CAD might start a little bit slow because he's been sitting, as No Sleep said, 4 hours. Not that it was 4 hours, but it was a while. Grizz nailed it. He said CAD's probably going to start slow. Jost will take it, but credit to CAD. He still kept game one very close, And then games two and three were literally nail biters. I mean, game three itself ended, I believe it was 7-6, CAD scoring in the final 2 minutes. So, great showing by CAD. Very impressed by him. And, it's just like when I think about CAD, it's just so surreal to me because, like I said in previous podcasts, this is a guy who barely plays 1v1. Like, isn't that fascinating, Rahel? It's so fascinating to me because most of us, we grind the game like crazy to be at the highest level. You have somebody like CAD winning.
CAD, you are officially my role model as an LG6s person. I'm now determined to win NHL 24 WC. No, I'm just kidding. But on a serious note, I think that is impressive. And I think that factors into like something that contributed to him really being able to stand out. I wonder if that sixes experience really, like, I don't know how exactly it goes over to competitive 1v1 because I don't play competitive 1v1. But like, it couldn't hurt to have that extra experience of being able to understand as a unit how to play, and then now you control that entire unit. I don't think that hurts at all. And I do think that is a contributor to him playing well and stuff. And I think another thing that I'm a little intrigued about, a lot of people were like, oh, like, cause he's, I think he's from Quebec, right?
Mm-hmm.
So people are like, oh, QC. Do you think him being in Quebec and having lower ping when he normally plays would help him in a LAN? I don't know. I was thinking about that.
You know what? I haven't thought about that. That's such a good question. But my immediate inclination, I might change when I think more about it, but my immediate inclination is to say yes. And the reason I say that is this. When I play West players like Sap Alien or like Owen DeBlue or whoever, the game is so delayed, right? It's incredibly delayed. There's obviously a lot of top West players. And even talking to the others, like when I talk to them, they'll say things like, no, it felt fine for me. Or they'll say things like, yeah, I'm sure there was delay, but I'm used to it. Right. So thinking from the other perspective, somebody like Cad, I mean, I have no idea what Cad's ping is. Like, obviously not everybody from QC gets 2 ping, but assuming he does, maybe he gets the other ping that half of the population gets at QC, which is like 18. But like, yeah, that could be a thing too. Like, you know, you're so used to that quick gameplay. Like when I think back to Leafs Gaming, that one event that I won, I started my day like 0-2 because I was like, wow, this game is like just too quick for me. Like, I can't believe everything is so smooth. Yeah, that could be a factor too. And then also like just thinking about Cad's history, like he was a versus lord for like years. He used to like destroy me and like pretty much everybody. And he was often considered a top 3 to 5 player in NA, but he stepped away from it for like a couple of years. And like, I know muscle memory is a thing, but, I do believe that he's also like naturally just talented and he has like an eye that not many people do, because the way he was scoring at will was outright impressive. And it's just like all just natural ability.
Yeah, I do agree with that. And obviously with the ping thing, like no one can really, like we're just kind of speculating on that. Like he could have 20 ping and then that's not a factor. But I do think that versus history in the past, you know, that it's always going to be at the back there. You just need to maybe take some time to pull it back. And I do think that was a big factor too.
Yeah. And then one more factor that I'm thinking about, Cad was the most experienced PlayStation player of the four. Like he played on PlayStation for years. Mm-hmm. However, at the same time, the controller on PS5, obviously it's a lot bigger than the original PS4 controller, but it doesn't help that you have experience on that console too. Obviously nothing to take away from him. Like I did expect him and Joe's to make the world finals and they did.
Yeah, I think that is a very good point there. And, you know, we'll touch base a little bit on his opponent in that final and how he got there. Joe's obviously defeating Duncan. That was interesting, Saphir.
Yeah, it was a great one. Like you said, like Joe started pretty slow, I believe. Who was his first matchup? He played it was Cad.
I think it was Sky.
Yeah. Oh, it was Sky. That's right. Yeah, yeah. And he beat Sky, but then I believe he won 1 and 2 in round robin. Like it wasn't the easiest route for Joe's, but Rahil, that semifinal matchup, I know you were very hyped. Walk us through it.
That semifinal to me and that final as well were the epitome of what NHL esports needs to be for it to be good. Very, very evenly matched between these two, back and forth going at it. Like one guy would get a lead and the other guy would be like, nope, you know what? That lead's gone in 5 seconds. I don't even care. You're done. And it was so close. It was so intense. Both games 1 and 2 went to overtime. Game 3 obviously was a little bit more of a final. I think it was 6-3 or 6-5. I can't remember what the final score was in game 3. There was a margin there though.
Yeah. Yeah, there was. And like, I know the margin kind of came, or the gap came like in the final minutes when Joe started pulling away essentially. But yeah, no. And you know, Duncan, he had his go-to scoring chance was like the rebound shot.
Yeah.
And he was very close. Like, and I mean, very close. If certain bounces went his way, in the overtime periods, like Joe's did get bailed on a couple of saves. But if some of those shots had gone in, like obviously the story would be flipped a little bit and Duncan would be at the World Finals. But like you said, it was such a tight series. It could have gone either way and happened to go Joe's way. And the reason it could have gone either way is because I'm sure you agree, everybody played so well yesterday for the most part, you know?
Yeah. Like, I agree. Everyone played really well. That semifinal was like the epitome of that, like I mentioned earlier too. I think I'm going to give props to Joe's here too, because Duncan did go one up in that series. He won game 1, I believe. And then it was Joe's. Right. Joe's came back and then, you know, game 2, knowing you're down, Duncan had the lead a couple times and he came back. Right. Joe's to me was someone who battled and didn't give up and kept playing and kept playing. And he made his way to Nashville now. He's going to Nashville alongside Cad, obviously. And that, to me, was just the, like, that was really fun esports hockey for NHL that I really enjoyed. And the finals were close as well. Obviously, not as much overtime. Obviously, you know, it was kind of like that. But it was still really, really good.
Yeah, it was just like a really fun series all around. And, you know, we can also touch up on Sky a little bit. I mean, Here's a guy who a lot of people said that, you know, Sky is very talented. He's never shown up in a tournament. And some would suggest that he didn't. I mean, he played good. Obviously, he started really slow against Joe's. I believe he lost like 6-1 or in that first game. But then he had really close games against Duncan and Kat. So Sky, it wasn't, he didn't go lightly. You know, he went 0-3. But I will say, I think a contributing factor to his loss is the fact that he had to play on a PS5 controller. He barely, I mean, he's actually never played on the system at all. I know the last few weeks he's played with the PS5 controller, but on Xbox, and there are differences between the consoles. So it's hard. Yeah.
And I think that does go into, you know, what we kind of want for the future of NHL esports too, Saphir. It's like, I think we need to get to a point where it doesn't matter what console you play on. You can play on what you prefer in any LAN. And, you know, that, I think that does contribute a little bit too. But that being said, though, like, I don't think Sky, like, you shouldn't have your head down. Like, you were in the final four of North American players. Like, that is good for you. And I think the thing is like, you think about Jose last year, had that experience of going to the LAN and playing, and now look at him now. I could see Sky kind of, like, he has the potential to replicate that too. We went to this LAN, obviously played good, didn't play good enough, but he's able to use that experience, build off that experience, and maybe next time he's at LAN, maybe he, I don't know, maybe he does better now. Maybe he switches over to the PS5 now. I think it's open there for him. I think you need to keep your head up high. And then touching on Duncan a little bit as well, I think the future for both of these guys, they're going to be around. They're always going to be in the mix of it. The one thing I'm going to asterisk on this is, we had so much unpredictability this year with the with just the World Championship. Gren was out, Regs was out, Polgs was out. Like, it's really interesting to me to see, obviously, how the finals go in Nashville on June 27th. But then when you go into next year, like, is this, like, is it just going to be, like, just as chaotic? Is there going to be some repetition now? Because we were used to so much repetition with Eki on the EU side, who's obviously still there now. But, like, Gren and Regs were just always there. You'd have an occasional other person pop in, but it was always Gren and Regs. Now it's, like, wide open. It's, like, is that going to be a place next year now too? So I think for Duncan and Sky, it's really going to be about staying consistent, because this is kind of the first year we really saw, like, a little bit of inconsistency.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that they will, you know, they'll carry this momentum forward for next year, and they're going to use this experience and use it for next year, obviously. Mm-hmm. And to your point with NHL 24 coming out, and, you know, there's going to be some heavy changes. I can tell you that right now. And so it's going to be very interesting from a competitive scene, who is able to maintain their skill and who is able to adjust and adapt throughout the year.
Yeah. And I think before we move on to the next topic, like, I think all the competitive players and casual players are really wanting NHL 24 to be a better game, because it's just, we all love hockey. It's more fun to enjoy a video game when it's good about your favorite sport. But also, even, like, for me, like, this year I did want to, like, not do great in esports, but, like, I wanted to try and contribute. By December, I was like, I can't play HUT. Even by, like, November, I was like, I just can't do it. And I was like, I was pulling really good cards. Like, I'm pretty sure, like, thanks to you, Saphir, I have to play HUT Champs this week. For those of you who don't know, Saphir, I was in his stream and he was like, hey, why don't you play HUT Champs this week? And I was like, okay, how many likes on my tweet? He said 5. And I was like, no, 25. And I'm at, like, I got like 30 in like 3 hours. So I'm playing HUT Champs now, which is, it is what it is. But I have 4 team of the years on my team. Like, I built 4 team of the years. I have a couple X factors. Like, I wanted to, and I think that's a testament to a lot of people who really want to play. And, like, there's probably people who are like, man, I play HUT. I'd love to have team of the years. I wish I could have done that. But that's just a testament to how much better we really want this game to get, Saphir.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, we want longevity, right? And that's, like, a main hope for me, and focus as well, you know, when talking to the team, is like, how do we ensure that there's longevity in the game for everybody, regardless of, like, you know, if you're into World of Chell or HUT or just, like, casual, or be a pro or franchise, whatever it may be. So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But I think the final point we're going to touch on, Saphir, obviously the Kroger CBJ 6v6 finale was going on this week. Week one went through. I love my 6v6 hockey because I just, like, for me, it's just a unmatched esports experience. But the observations for week one, Saphir, we obviously have the standings here. What are your initial thoughts?
Man, I have to say, there's I know we're so used to some of the usual teams at the top, right? You've got Isles GT, you've got Entourage, Caps Gaming, Composure, Scary Hours. Like, all those teams are doing fairly well. I mean, Scary Hours number 14 right now. Look for them to come within the top 10. But what I'm so intrigued by is the return of BBB. And so for those of you that don't know, BBB was a top 3 to 5 team, I would say, back in like NHL 2021, and they stepped away for a while. The team itself was spearheaded by Bones and Jemima, essentially the founders of BBB. So they're making a significant return. They're doing really well right now. I'm looking at the standings here. They're ranked 7. Rahil, it's just a feel-good moment for these guys who've been away for a few esports seasons to come back and do so well after week one.
It is a nice testament. I mean, obviously you got like, Bones and Jemima are obviously the founders there, but like, you know, it's always nice to see these guys kind of come back and not just come back, but do well, especially when it's someone who's a little bit of that like legacy team, as you mentioned. And I mean, hey, listen, to be 7th right now, like that is impressive. The record is obviously 6-2. They looked pretty good from what I watched, Saphir. I don't know. You think they're gonna stay in that top 8 range, or you think they're gonna fall out a little bit?
Yeah, honestly, like I'm very curious to see how they do just because of some time off that they took. But I'm very hopeful about them. And as we look at these other teams too, Rahil, I'm looking at Voltage. Okay, so Voltage is really interesting. Oh, now, think about Caps Gaming and how that team was formed, right, through Team Prodigy. You had some 1v1 lords. This year, this particular team has some very familiar names, Rahil.
Yeah. So we obviously have Jos, OTB, but also Uninstall on there, Saphir. And listen, those are some pretty good 1v1 guys. We were just talking about Jos not too long ago. And for them to be 8-0 through week one, like, man – and that's a brand new team that was from the Sharks Pacific Cups up here. Like, for a brand new team to do that good week one, if they keep that up, man, like, they're going to give teams like Isles GT and BBB a run for their money.
No, that's exactly it. And that's why, you know, like, this is the team on the rise. This is the team that's, like, making headlines now. They're giving me that Prodigy, that Team Prodigy vibes to it. And I'm very optimistic. I really am. I feel like this is a team that could land themselves like a top 5 position sometime in the future. And, you know, this is why I'm so excited about the CBJ 6v6 finale. It gives a chance for these players to continue to gel, you know, continue to build on their competitiveness, their chemistry, because I know with NHL 24, there's going to be a lot more sixes tournaments. So I would say these are some of the teams to look out for, obviously. But I mean, we'll see. I'm sure we're going to follow the tournament. It does go right until mid-June. There's a lot to happen. And we'll keep everybody posted on that.
Yeah, super excited for that. Listen, I'm wearing my Isles GT shirt that we got. So I'm going to say I'm unofficially rooting for them. If there are any other teams out there that would like to send me merch so I could root for you guys, let me know. Reach out to me in my DMs.
There you go.
I'm really excited to see how week two goes. I think week two is really going to set apart. Like, if you see teams in the same spots or close to the same spots, that kind of shows like, okay, they're there to play. It wasn't just a fluky week, for example, because I can testament to playing LG. Like, there's some weeks where it's like, man, like, we went 4-0, we felt amazing, and then we play like bottom feeders and we just get absolutely smacked on. It's the thing with the NHL scene too, especially when it comes to 6v6, is it's just anything can happen. You have 12 players on the ice, and I think that's what makes it really exciting. It's like when you're playing 1v1, one person can make a mistake. When you're playing, or two people, I guess, can make a mistake. When you're playing 6v6, 12 people can make a mistake. A defender could have a breakdown. A forward can miss a back check. The goalie could be missing something. And I think that'll kind of help shape out how the rest of the weeks are going to go. Excited though, Saphir.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like right now, the Underdogs and Voltage, they're both 8-0. And I will tell you that the Blue Jackets gaming team, along with League Gaming, they do feature some of these big games live on stream. So if you want to catch the action, you can go on the Blue Jackets gaming Twitch page, NHL Blue Jackets on Twitch. And so the way the scheduling works is that whatever seed you are at, you could be matched randomly to go up against a team seated 10 spots below or above you. Mm-hmm. And CBJ and Lee Gaming, they feature the biggest matchups, right? So there's a chance that we could see Underdogs versus Voltage And I would love to see that because both teams are undefeated right now.
And I love that because obviously we have the traditional norm of like, you know, 1-8-16, 2-15. But that just adds some extra chaos in the mix. It's like, hey, man, we have this huge messing ball of chaos. Let's add some more chaos in there, have some fun. And you know what? You could run into a team like, for example, you could run into one of those Div 4 teams that are like Malevolent or however you say their name. They're obviously they're sitting in 13. Like, what if they play someone in 23rd? And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, like I'm in the second round now. Like I'm feeling good. Or you could be someone like Scary Hours where you're sitting in 14th and now you're playing Entourage or Isles GT. And that's the unpredictability about it. That it's awesome, man.
It's definitely awesome. And like it shifts the standings like drastically from a night to night and a week to week basis. So like, even though as we see these top 10 teams, this could be all different depending on how things go with the scheduling. And the best part about it too, is that the teams don't get like 24 hours to sit on it. They are told on game day who they play. Yeah. I believe it's usually at noon and the games are at 9 p.m. Eastern. So not a lot of team, a quick turnaround, but that's part of the excitement for sure.
Man, NHLWC coming up, Saphir. We got the 6v6 finale with CBJ going on. I'm excited for the next couple weeks of podcasts. Any other final notes, Saphir?
No, that's it for me, man. Like you said, lots of excitement. And, you know, I look very much forward to discussing some of these results. I think it's going to be an interesting ride for sure.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully next episode we don't have to talk about the Leafs that much because I think you do need a well-deserved break from that. But on that note, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for watching and listening to episode 15 of the NHL podcast. We will see you guys next time. Have a fantastic rest of your day.